Hello and welcome to the Bald Move Television Podcast, where the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
And as we've done on Wednesdays the last 5 weeks, we are going to collapse our all of television encompassing focus down to a singular episode of television, the final episode in the Chernobyl saga that we've been watching these last few weeks. I was so enthralled, and so many others has been enthralled by, on HBO. Jim, last week I was afraid that with all of the heroics, the nuclear-powered heroics over with, that this kind of trial and finger-pointing and the political process would be kind of a dull affair and maybe turn people off. I was really impressed by how riveting this episode of television was and how crazy informative it was. What did you think?
Yeah, I think it certainly was. The trial as portrayed in this episode was exciting. Is that a weird thing to say about a trial? I don't know. Apparently the real one, extremely boring. So they decided to go a little bit off script here. But I think it paid off. I think, like, showing Legasov's heroism here after his implied or you know, kind of skipped over failure in Vienna, we get to understand that he is sort of regretting the decision he made there. He's having another opportunity here to say his piece, one that he takes. And I thought it was exciting. It was delivering on the message, or delivering the message to the people who needed to hear it the most, the Soviet people, the scientists in that room. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought that it would be hard to, like, this 10-minute thing where they do, where Jared Harris explains why the reactor blew up and why you could reasonably believe that this reactor couldn't blow up. It took literally everything going wrong. But also they point out that, like, you know, Dyatlov might have been a man waving a gun around at a party squeezing the trigger because he thought the safety would work. But point of fact, he thought the safety would work. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely some contributory negligence to when you actually shoot someone in the face in that. But, like, you know, comrade, why are you waving the gun around the everyone at the party in the first place? So I thought the episode gave good explanations of how that could happen. It's like, again, it's startling to me to watch the political maneuverings in the manager's office that led to disaster 12 hours before. Like, we have seen this happen, things like that happen in our American life. The boss screaming at his underlings that they don't know anything and to ignore the safety protocols. Like, we've seen that stuff happen in our own. It's the verbiage is used that is used is different, and whether it's a bureaucrat or a corporate boardroom type, but, like, I just got so much so much kind of sympathy and empathy of what's going on, and you know, that's a frightening thing. Is I feel like that they're. A lot of things that Legasov says in the second half in the trial about, like, why this happened in Russia and it wouldn't necessarily happen in the West are things that, like, all those safety things that we used to do, that, like, we used to worry about the thing that couldn't happen and put extra level of safety and stuff, like, seems like we're not doing that as much with our infrastructure and our own, you know, the way we proceed forwards and new development. It seems like we do try to cut costs.
Yeah, it's expensive.
And we take out safety things because, again, like, why? Like, you know, it's like the anti-vax stuff, you know? Like, why expose my child to a risk when it's safe? Like, we've eradicated diseases. Let's just strip off this lead armor because who wants to put all that lead around the buildings? It's going to be expensive. It's going to blow up anyway. It's weird for me to watch this series because it just feels like I can see so many relatable examples all around me.
Mm-hmm. And that's really what the series is getting at. I mean, the core idea here is the cost of lies, and it's delivered in the final line of the series. It's been delivered many times before that in the series. Yeah, it's what is the cost of lies?
Each lie incurs a debt to the truth that will eventually be paid. It's, like, going to be more expensive. It's going to cost lives, but you can't get around it.
And I like in that moment he doesn't say that must be paid. He says that is paid. It kind of reinforces the fact that there is no...
Right.
You know, you can postpone, but you're incurring a debt that will be paid no matter what you try and do.
Yeah.
That was, I think, a good way to put it. I found myself over the course of this episode going, I wonder if it would have made more sense to sort of get in Dyatnov's head and understand what kind of man could lead to a scenario like this, because we see that, you know, he's clearly flouting convention and rules here with this reactor test, pushing it beyond its limits, and he seems to be this arrogant asshole. Like, I wish I knew more about him, but I think the way that they actually went with this episode serves the point more that he is not ultimately what's culpable here. Mm-hmm. The system that they've set up of right. their governance, you know, their system of lies,
yeah,
and saving face at all costs, those sorts of things.
If not Dyatlov, it'd have been someone eventually somewhere.
Yeah, that's the actual problem here, and you'll always have men like Dyatnov who are, you know, just assholes for the sake of being an asshole.
In every culture and every system, you'll have these guys.
But the system itself here was a huge problem.
Yep.
And I think it was more effective that they went that way.
You have to properly contain and monitor such individuals, like much like a nuclear power plant. You know?
Okay, that's another good thing to talk about, because I'm actually surprised we saw none of the sarcophagus stuff. We saw none of the creation of, you know, the thing that is still containing that radiation to this day. I was a little surprised
by that. We did get a title card. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they had an hour and 15 minutes of screen time left, and they devoted 100% of it to the trial and aftermath, and they decided to skip ahead.
I mean, is there nothing exciting about encasing a huge nuclear power plant in lead and concrete?
I bet it was pretty, like, at that point, yeah, it was just a construction project. I mean, yeah, you're probably...
It would be intellectually interesting for me,
yeah,
at least.
And I wouldn't be surprised if the people building that didn't get, you know... It's kind of like a dirty little secret about astronauts is you are greatly shortening your life and taking all kinds of cancer risks to spend 6 months in space in the International Space Station, for example. Like, everyone that goes up there is not healthy. Like, you're above the protective blanket of a large part of the Earth's atmosphere and not the magnetosphere, but, like, you're just getting bombarded with all these cosmic rays and radiation, and it does shorten your life. So, like, I wonder if it's kind of like maybe that. It's like, okay, you know, it's like these guys got... I mean, shit, I'm just making shit up now, which I guess you can do with the...
Well, I mean, they say there were...
Called Chernobyl.
Sure, but, you know, they say there are between 4 and 90-something thousand deaths that are attributed long-term to Chernobyl, and some of those people, I'm sure, were part of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It would have been intellectually interesting to me to see, okay, how did they construct this thing? How did they... come to this plan of, like, here's, you know, similar to how they solved every other problem.
It's also super frustrating to know that, like, these 600,000 people just were conscripted and thrown at the problem that the Soviet Union studiously chose to ignore. And, like, that would have been an awesome study that the world could have benefited from, like, exposure, radiation, and actuarial tables. And they didn't keep records. They didn't even bother to keep records. And the reason is because, from their perspective, it could just lead to further embarrassment. I mean, there's a reason that, I mean, this is a shocking fact, true to this day, that the official death toll for Chernobyl stands at 31 people, the people that died in the immediate explosion and response. Mm-hmm. You know, essentially all the people that got welded in the zinc caskets, like, those are the people that died from Chernobyl. All the other stuff is just, you know, it's just cancer, man. Like, how can, who can say? Like, you know, people smoked a lot in Eastern Europe, and... It is frustrating, but, you know, when I saw that title card and I looked at, like, how much time and expense and the fact that this thing bankrupted, you know, one of the things that bankrupted the Soviet Union, and I think about, you know, like, the modern crisis we have today, which is global warming, which, you know, upwards of 97-98% of the world's climate scientists say is going to cost us a lot of money and is going to displace a lot of people, and it's going to cost millions of refugees, and it's not hard to see that the resulting kind of civil unrest and famines could lead to deaths many times over, hundreds of thousands. Mm-hmm. Yet we have tens of millions, if not billions, of Dyatlovs just sitting there poking at this reactor and saying, yeah. It can't possibly be go wrong. Don't listen to those people. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I'm not a scientist. I just learned in my school to trust science because it's not perfect, but it's the best thing we got. Mm-hmm. So anyway, do you want to talk about the episode in like kind of a more structured way now?
Sounds good.
Before we go further in the episode, I want to talk about what's going on here at Bald Move this week. Starting with the Bald Move TV feed, the thing that you're listening to right now, this here podcast. This Friday, we're going to be talking about our final thoughts on Good Omens, the Terry Pratchett-Neil Gaiman collaboration that came out on Amazon Prime last week. We're also going to be looking at the new Netflix sci-fi thriller, I Am Mother, which stars a Million Dollar Baby. Help me out here.
Hilary Swank.
Thank you, Hilary Swank. It looks real good. And we'll also have some thoughts on The Handmaid's Tale. Bald Movies. Last week we saw Godzilla, King of Monsters, speaking of the horrors of radiation.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, speaking of the horrors of mutations brought about by radioactivity, we'll be seeing the new X-Men, Dark Phoenix, a cautionary tale for what happens when you are mean to a teenage mutant. They lash out. Lash out.
True.
We've also received a lot of great questions for our 50 million. I don't know if you guys even knew this, but we just recently passed an important milestone, 50 million downloaded podcasts in Bald Move history. We are celebrating this by having just an open Q&A. People can send us whatever they want. If you're interested in that, you still have a few days maybe left to submit stuff into QA at baldmove.com. And the resulting podcast we're going to record next week, and it'll pop up in your Bald Move TV feed. So make sure you're subscribed to that, Bald Movies, and the other stuff that you want to keep up on. All right, back to the episode. Let's talk about the cold open. First of all, the episode's title, Vichnaya Pamyat.
I don't know what this means.
So I guess in like Eastern Orthodox Church, this is the final thing that's said at a person's funeral, and it means eternal memory. Like you're asking God to keep this person in his mind forever, so they'll live forever. So this is like the earnest hope of the filmmakers, I think, that we should remember this, that we should remember the lesson, the cost of lies. So I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm. The cold open is an extended sequence of shows. Like, you know, we talked about this earlier on, that how this Pripyat was supposed to be the shining Soviet jewel of a city. And it's like, you know, this is like the modern way we want to go forward with like super clean power. And it's going to like be, you know, it's going to be nicer, and it's going to be, everything's going to be cheaper and more abundant. And then and it looked amazing. Like, it looked like a town that I'd want to live in. Yeah. And people with their children, and they're playing, and everyone's happy. And we saw several people that are going to die 12 hours from now with their friends and loved ones. And then we see the thing that's going to poison this particular reactor of civilization and commerce and people, which is greed and ambition.
Sure.
Like this, and it's not even that, it's like even this, like they hint that there was, you know, when the plant manager's like, oh, these fuckers, you know, like the safety test is going to be canceled because it's the end of the month and we got to get our quotas in, and never, like, we can't, like, it's like there's all so many systemic failures that, like, you got to go back to the guy who got kicked out of his job because he tried to raise the alarm about the AZ-5 thing. It's like, this is just the things that happened in the 12 hours immediate, but there's so many things that stretch backwards. And, you know, the fact that, like, there's so many opportunities to stop it.
Yeah. I mean, this is an experiment. This was like the one part of Chernobyl that I had actually read about.
Yeah.
There were so many instances where they had tried this experiment, with the safety, you know, spinning down of the reactor, drawing the power, all that, that they explain later on, that I think there was a sense of like, let's just get this done.
Mm-hmm.
Let's fucking finally do this test.
Yeah.
Cause they spent 3 years trying to get it done. Conditions have never been right.
Yeah.
And so you can sort of get a sense of, well, there's a lot of, opportunity here for these people. They see promotions in the cards. If things go well, if they can get a result, if
they can just force a result.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have to be a valid result, because the truth doesn't, it's not
right.
It's not. It's arriving at the correct answer, not the true answer.
Okay.
And the correct answer is we passed. We conducted this safety test.
Mm-hmm.
The true answer would be we conducted a safety test and it told us nothing about whether these generators can still power themselves and whether this could, like, it's completely useless, but it is a result, and that's going to be the thing that get kicked up to the bosses and like, oh yeah, all the safety tests are done. Good. We're good. We're good now.
Yeah. It's almost like the short-sightedness here is incredible to me, mm-hmm. because they, one of the best parts of the episode to me was being in that control room with them as they're going through these tests, and you can see the test is failing on every level.
Oh my god.
There's no way in hell you're getting anything useful out of this test, because at this point, you know, not only has the reactor been poisoned, the test is poisoned.
Yeah.
So
like even conducting the test would not have told you whether it would work
exactly
or not.
So what is the end goal here in mind? The end goal is I want to be able to say that I ran the test as I was expected to do. And the fact that they won't be able to use those test results, or I don't even know if they will. Maybe Dadnoff comes back and extrapolates and says,
That's what I'm saying.
We got the 200 megawatts, so maybe we can, or maybe, you know, 700 would have been fine, and all of this, the math checks out.
Yeah, like, oh, well, if it worked, if we conducted a test at 200 megawatts, then obviously it'd work at 700, which is the lowest.
Right.
It's that kind of mindset.
It's all the way back to the Röntgens per hour, you know, where they go, well, our meters read this.
Yeah.
Let's send that up the chain.
Yeah, like don't tell me the truth, because the truth interferes with my assessment of how the world is.
Yeah,
I want to believe that I'm a successful manager and I was able to do this thing that no one else has done. The fact that I did it poorly and mm-hmm. and gave us no useful information is beside the fact. And
right.
actually that's only a fact if I let it become one.
True.
Like,
yeah.
It's fucked up. It's fucked up. My advice is look at every example of that shit going on in your own life and try to root it out. at your fucking job, if you're in the military, if you're in your family, if you, like wherever you see that kind of mentality, don't fucking let it stand unchallenged, because who knows? Like, that's the thing. No one in that, I think the worst stakes that everyone had in that room was, oh, we're going to fuck up the reactor and it's going to have to be scrammed. And like, I've heard that, like, if you scram a nuclear reactor, it's like fucking game over. Trying to get that thing like back to a state where it can run could take weeks, months. Obviously, the Soviet Union couldn't afford this thing to be shut down, which is the reason the safety test. So it's like these people were, I think, risking their careers. I did not think they thought that they were risking a continent.
Sure.
Because, and again, it's like, yeah, Dyatlov and everybody here were waving guns around at the parties, but they all thought the safes were on. So, like, when the gun finally goes off, because it turns out the 30th time you jiggle a gun and point it at someone and squeeze the trigger, that's going to loosen the safety enough. Is the gun manufacturer at fault? Is the person, like, it's both, right?
Sure.
But I don't know. It's the fundamental unfairness of the show trial is that the gun manufacturer in this case is going to completely shield themselves from any liability,
mm-hmm.
and only blame the people waving around guns at the party, which is kind of like, in a certain way, like somewhat rational. Like, the reason they would get away with it is because that sounds about right. Like, who the fuck mm-hmm. does this, you know?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the trial. There's the wind up where Sharkov, which is like, what a great name. He sounds like a Russian shark. He checks on Legasov.
Is this Skarsgård?
Huh?
Is this Skarsgård?
No, this is the KGB guy.
Okay, yeah.
He's even got the black doll eyes that Quint was always talking about in Jaws. He checks in on this guy, and this essentially is making sure that he maintains the party discipline, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny because this guy's like, look at this newspaper article, "At Last a Soviet Scientist Tells the Truth." I resent the implication. I mean, Jesus Christ, this is the core, like the cognitive dissonance in 1984 was always talking about. The fact that this guy, while discussing an elaborate cover-up and the web of lies they're telling, resents the international community for assuming that everything that a Soviet's going to say is going to be a self-serving lie.
Yeah, it's doublethink.
What the fuck? And also you start to get the thing that sticks in Legasov's craw is that he's doing everything right, and they keep on saying, oh, well, you know, so let me make sure that you have no leverage left, and only then and only then will we talk about fixing the reactors. Like, mm-hmm. it feels like the fix is in.
Yeah.
There's also, we see Legasov in his apartment. He's starting to lose his hair. We know we commented in the first episode how much older and haggard and poor his health looked compared to pre-Chernobyl Jared Harris. And this is just kind of like to set him up for Kamyuk visiting and saying, look, I get it. You couldn't betray your country, but now we're in the Soviet Union, and at this trial, you have an opportunity to talk directly to your fellow scientists, and you have a unique opportunity to actually start a change, hold people accountable. It's in fact the last opportunity you're going to get, because once this is signed off on and done, and they get their show trial, and they have their heroes, and they have their victims, you will be irrelevant. You'll have no more leverage.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that, you know, Jared Harris's retort here is that, like, hey, you remember that guy who found out the flaw of the AZ-5 reactor? He was sacked in his job and forbidden to do science again because he discovered an inconvenient truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know, it's crazy. I really like the soundtrack when they return to Chernobyl, because if you listen to the podcast, I guess there's a Russian law that said that, like, if like any crime has to be tried within like the province that it created in, and
this
even
is insane.
Though
yeah,
and the Soviets were invested in saying that, like, hey, yeah, Chernobyl's safe again, that they conducted this, as they said in the trial, 20 kilometers from the Chernobyl site, and it wasn't safe, it was dangerously radioactive. Mm-hmm. But this wasn't a courtroom, this was just some kind of auditorium that they kind of set up for this purpose. And then the trial begins. But I love the soundtrack when they return to Chernobyl. It's like the Jaws soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can hear, like, it's you know, you can't see the fin out of the water, but it's there somewhere. What do you think of Roose Bolton as a prosecutor?
I like him.
Yeah.
He's great. I don't know. That actor has something.
He's not a bad guy. I mean, that's the thing about Roose, is, like, he's not a bad guy. He's not a good guy. He's just a guy, and he's kind of a scary guy, and that's what I got from this guy.
Yeah, I didn't feel like he had so much of an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I didn't feel like anybody in this room had that much of an agenda, or I think Legasov would have been shut down far harder than he was.
And then begins, like, the bulk of this episode, which is the finest explanation of why this happened. Like, I've seen a lot of, at this point, I've seen a lot of documentaries, I've read a lot of articles, and this could just straight up be something on the Discovery Channel. Like, the way they have the Sherbina character, the Kamyuk character, and the Legasov character lay out everything that should have happened, everything that did happen, all of the failures, the thing that they did with Legasov, where he had those red and blue cards, which are hilariously in Russian, is in Cyrillic, so we don't understand, but all we know, but you don't have to, because he's showing what a delicate balance this is,
yeah,
and why things went away and why things were added on. And, like, it's so funny, because, like, my son has been watching this with me, and I haven't explained to him any, like, you know, we haven't had a lot of long talks about it. But, like, I could, like, either my 12-year-old son, he's a bright guy and he likes science, but, like, he was already seeing, when you get to the point where you understand that, like, now, even though none of the men in the room know why this is happening, but this reactor is now going to run out of control and there's nothing that they can do to stop it.
Yeah.
Other than hitting the scram switch, which in this case is a detonator.
Uh-huh.
I just feel like it's like, if you don't understand it, I'm not going to try to explain it here, because just go back and watch the episode. That's literally the best way that I can think to visualize it and explain it.
Yeah, I read through the Wikipedia article before, or maybe after we watched episode one, to see why this reactor exploded. And I'll say it was a little over my head as far as the terms they were using.
Yeah, positive void coefficient, negative thermal coefficient.
Right,
like,
but they do an okay job of making you understand why that happened. And then I think the show does a really good job.
Like, there's this startling, I think one of the best parts of the episode, where they show inside the reactor and you can see the reactor floor where they're like the various fuel and control rods that, and they talk about how these weigh 300-400 pounds. They just start jumping up and down like, you know, fucking moles in a whack-a-mole game. And then it explodes, and then they slow down time and they show how the oxygen and the hydrogen and the superheated bits of graphite lead to the actual explosion, which blows the reactor apart. And it's fucking amazing. And something that a trick that they played that they talked about on the official podcast is there's a whole lot of points where you're tricked into thinking, oh, maybe they're going to stop this.
Sure.
And the unique way they told this is like every single time someone's like, oh, we should stop this, or you need to sign this order or something. It's like, oh, maybe there's a way they can. Of course, they're not going to. But it's amazing how like you get caught up in. You know, the best kind of stories, like, you know, it's like all throughout Breaking Bad, you knew Walter White couldn't die. Mm-hmm. But by God, they made you feel like he could on multiple occasions. And this is the opposite of that. Like, you think that, oh, these nice people aren't going to die and they're not going to lose their family and they're not going to irradiate a continent because cooler heads will prevail. And they don't. They just don't. But I don't know. And then Dyatlov, like, I guess this is... Do you want to talk about... Do you want to talk or like take it? Because the next thing to talk about is there's a really fantastic scene between Sherbina and Legasov. And maybe we can talk mm-hmm. about our intellectual philosophical problems with the court scene itself.
Yeah. So I stated earlier, I didn't feel like anybody in this room had an agenda. And I think that's a problem because I think it's a problem created by the episode and the way that it plays with history. Mm-hmm. Because we know that the people in that room do have agendas. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody is there simply to get this procedure of blame pointing, essentially finger pointing, over with. Mm-hmm. They've already determined the outcome. They know who's guilty here. They know who they're going to execute. Let's just get this over with. And apparently, from what I understand, none of anything you see on the screen here is accurate to history, except for the stuff that happens in the control room. We don't know like the tone of it, but we know the exact order of events, mm-hmm. like the buttons they pushed, the switches they flipped.
Because there's like a black box that records that part of that computer system was saying at the, like the computer was saying, shut me down, shut me down, shut me down. Like it was recording all the button pushes. And then I guess with the testimony of all the survivors, they were able to then explain who pushed what and under what circumstances. But we do know the precise down to the second, course of events because of that system.
And we also know a lot about the court proceedings as they actually happened, but they were nothing like this. Mm-hmm. Legasov apparently not even part of this trial.
Right.
He never showed up at this trial. It's weird to me, I guess, with the lengths they went to sort of bring him into this, because I'm looking at it and on one hand I think, okay, well, it's cool because you need to show that individual acts of heroism are valuable. And what happens with Legasov in this episode certainly makes that point. But I think also, more importantly, it's everyone coming together as an aggregate that really makes the change. It's not simply, oh, one person gets up on in front of a jury, gives a testimony, and everything's good again,
says
right?
to the Soviet people, you can't handle the truth, you
right
know?
Right, that doesn't happen. But it needs to happen hundreds of times. Like, people need to be exposed to the idea of telling the truth regardless of the cost many, many times. So I think, like, in some ways it undermines what I think is the larger idea here, that people as a whole need to come to terms with the truth. Mm-hmm. But it also makes for some great drama.
Yeah, and like we've had this kind of conversation several times where, like, I've been a little bit more critical about, like, well, why did you need to make this minor change here? Like Jared Harris, why, or Legasov, why not have his family there? Why not do this? And there's reasons for all of it. Mm-hmm. And I've agreed with some of them. I disagree with others. But it's funny because this one I felt like, because the truth is that Legasov spent his remaining years on Earth trying to, you know, agitate amongst the scientific community to raise awareness for this issue. He did lie on the world stage because he does, from all accounts, he was a patriot. Mm-hmm. He did believe in the ideals of Marxist-Leninism, and he was committed to the ideals of socialism, and he was only too happy to carry that water on the international stage. But he also had a duty to the truth, and didn't want to see more reactors explode. So, and this made him a pariah in the Soviet scientific community because, you know, scientists aren't perfect. They're not divine angelic beings. They need controls over them as well. And that control on scientists is the scientific method and peer review. Mm-hmm. That, like, if you take out that peer review or you circumvent it with appeals to authority, like, well, I'm the chief nuclear scientist of the Soviet Union, comrade, and I think I know a little bit more about, like, blah, blah, blah.
And it's Dyadnov in the reactor control room saying, I've been doing this for 25 years.
Only
have
in
you?
The science community instead of... Right. So a lot of, you know, like, and if you support this... So, like, how do you tell an 18-month campaign over tons of, you know, conversations and presentations and editorials and... You know, also, like, have a whole new villain, cast of villains of, like, scientists and bureaucrats and that domain. Because the end result is the same. Due to declining health and not being able to get his message out, he recorded these tapes, these memoirs of what actually happened, disseminated them, and then killed himself. And that combination did eventually galvanize the scientific community to stand up and be like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. You know, like, he was too big a profile and his suicide was too big a profile that it could no longer be ignored. So how the fuck do you tell that in an hour of television? You know, and so what they did is they just fabricated a trial. They took the actual show trial that happened and they just laid out this entire case and they made Legasov have that you can't handle the truth moment. And it's super fucking dramatically appropriate, but it is. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how else you tell the story. It does seem like they hewed to the core truth of, like, you know, how Legasov, you know, his actual contribution and what actually happened. But it's a lot. It seems like the show took big, complicated, sprawling and ultimately boring issues and collapsed them down to, like, single, you know, individuals. Instead of an entire community mm-hmm. of scientists working to investigate it, it's just this one woman. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, all these conversations over time, it was a 3-minute speech where he said, you know, a reason why this happens is because we're too fucking cheap, and we lie too much to ourselves. I mean, like, you don't have to sex up men running out for 90 seconds to hurl radioactive graphite off of a roof, right? Like, that's... Sure. That's true.
It's dramatic in and of itself.
It's dramatic and it's visual and the heroics are right there. You don't have to sex up a bunch of naked miners going in the bowels of the earth to try to refrigerate a reactor that might burn to the groundwater table. You don't, like, it's just, you don't have to dramatize firemen getting their faces melted off because they respond to this fucking hellish disaster. You kind of have to dramatize this because otherwise this would probably be 8 more hours. And it would be extremely tedious to watch.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know. I struggle with where I draw the line on this stuff because I do want to watch good dramatic television. At the same time, like, it's such an important message. I don't want, like, it's like the Freddie Mercury Queen Bohemian Rhapsody movie, right? We came away from that super hyped on it, going, yeah, like, look at this mm-hmm. life of this amazing person and band.
Yep.
You find out after reading a few reviews and a few takedowns later, okay, well, a lot of this shit is actually sort of fabricated mm-hmm. and it didn't actually happen like this. And you start to think less of it, right? And you start to go almost like, almost feel ripped off by this dramatization of real life events. I feel like there is a line somewhere, and I'm not sure where it is, but that you can't cross. Otherwise, any message you're trying to get across with your dramatization and your fictionalization of these events is lost mm-hmm. in simply the chatter about how this isn't real, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe we're guilty of gilding that lily right here.
No, I mean, I think that the people... So, like, if you're inclined to be dismissive about climate science, then everything I just said about the fact that one of the villains in this story is the scientific community of the Soviet Union, like mm-hmm. A person could be like, aha, see, these people that say they're above these concerns and they're only concerned for the truth, they're just as political and bureaucratic as the rest of us. And they're getting billions of dollars for climate research and grant money and this. And they're saying this thing because if they said that, if they told the truth, that there is no problem, that they would lose their grant money, and plus they're all a bunch of socialist communists anyway, and they want to hurt the capitalists, and they want to hurt the economy to bring about, like, it's so then when you shade this particular truth, the people that you are trying to reach, presumably, because I do think, broadly speaking, this is a criticism about, you know, a growing problem in American politic, which is our inability to deal with real problems in a truthful, forthright, factual manner, and also how that applies to things like global warming. And the people that need to hear that the most are going to, you know, it's human nature to try to find the very first weapon against this cognitive dissonance you're feeling, and like, oh, well, they fucking soft-pedaled the science shit. Well, fuck that. You know, like, this is all a bunch of lies. I don't have to think about any of it. If 5% of it's untrue, then it's all untrue. And, like, that's why it's, like, you need to have the preponderance of truth be as much as you can. So it's as like, you know, the there's certain percentages where it's, like, okay, if it's 50% lies, 50% truth, like, a reasonable person can just throw the whole thing in a trash bin. As you go to, like, 75-25, 80-20, you know, 85-15, the dismissals become increasingly bad faith, and it's a smaller pool. So, like, I think that if you want to influence people, you have to tell more truth than lies.
And I always felt like the show was doing that up until maybe even this episode.
Even this didn't change the essential fact of who the heroes were, who the villains were, what actually happened. Fair. It's just makes it easily digestible to an audience in an hour. But it does leave it open to bad faith dismissals, and it probably would be if they did it 100% accurate.
I almost feel like there's another hour of television here, and it is the Jared Harris dealing with the aftermath of Vienna and coming to terms with the fact that he lied and that it may cost many, many more thousands of lives in the future.
Yeah.
And shortcut some of his efforts there. Because, like, putting him in this trial, I think, is the most egregious thing.
Well,
putting him in front of the science community in this pivotal moment, giving a pivotal speech that is... You're meant to think he changed the hearts and minds of people within a three-minute window where he was giving testimony as an expert witness. I feel like there is maybe another hour of television, and maybe it's boring. Maybe it's just not as exciting, and people won't remember it. And you won't have that, Vichnaya, Pavnya, whatever it is. You won't get that effect, right?
Right.
And they're going for that with this series. And, you know, I'm torn. I'm torn on how they portrayed this whole thing. Even though I found it riveting.
Yeah. So they have a break right here when Dyatlov has an outburst where he tries to deny that he's in the control room, which is kind of like... This is a weak defense because this is a critical test that has already started with a bunch of anomalies, and you, the person who is responsible for this room, is just going to leave to take a shit. Like,
why did you not shit before you came on duty?
Or maybe you're at a vital point. Like, if you're that blinding of a need to shit, maybe you call the test off. It's not too late.
Right.
But you're gonna give the order to, like, bring the reactor back on and then, like, bounce. It's fucking crazy. But the
And it was a total lie.
Like, oh yeah.
Everybody in that room said that he was there. All of it says he was there.
And there's just, like, you know, tons of crazy shit. Like, I really, the fact that, like, it just laid out, and all this stuff is entirely true. That, you know, you had this night shift people that were less experienced and they were unfamiliar with their protocols. The protocols had handwritten annotations and crossing outs and, like, you know, what kind of she invoked Yuri Gagarin, which is, like, you know, Superman in Soviet Union.
Yeah.
This man, multiple time hero of the Soviet Union, first man in space, international hero, died too young for him to be a political embarrassment. He's just like the fucking, he's like the, you know, in a society that has no official religion, he's a saint. And she's saying, like, imagine Yuri Gagarin on his fateful launch when he goes into space for the first time. He gets handed a binder full of stuff, half of it's crossed out. He has no months of training. He has no, like, you're not even, it's just like, yeah, go now, do this. So you just grab a guy, throw him in the capsule, like, go to space, man. I thought that was very, very strong to invoke that. And this outburst where they get to Dyatlov gives us a nice chance to, like, stop the trial and have this great moment between Sherbina and Legasov where they're talking about the history of the Ukraine and how many people have died and how yet people continue to move here and think that it'll never happen to him, them. And he analogizes, like, you know, you told me that we'd be dead within 5 years, and I believed you. But then, you know, a year went by, 2 years went by. I thought it wouldn't happen to me, and now I'm coughing my lungs up. And this whole, like, this is like the Dunning-Kruger effect in a nutshell. Do you know what that is? That's the...
I do, but I always forget.
So it's like, this is like the relate, like, the more actual expertise and intelligence you have in a certain area, the more you know what you don't know, and you're less confident about expressing that. Whereas if you know just a little about the thing and you're dumb, you are the opposite. You think everything's easy and like, oh, if it was me in this position, I'd do everything right. And this
is essentially the effect that every president has when they go into office for the first time.
They're
like, I'm going to change this and I'm going to change that. And they get in and, oh, fuck. Oh,
shit. We killed JFK and there's aliens and marijuana actually is a mind control drug from the, oh my God, what are we going to do? That's why we can't legalize it, obviously. But yeah, you've got Sherbina who says, like, I've wasted my life because, like, that thing where he says, I don't ever believe anything that comes out of the Central Committee, but I believe this because if this was a major disaster, I wouldn't be the one they put in charge of it because I'm a fucking, I'm a fucking idiot. And, we know that, like, yeah, Legasov definitely was giving people accurate information, but as he points out, like, any one of 1,000 scientists in the Soviet Union could have done the same job. How many people could have gotten 750,000 people, lunar rovers, every bit of lead and boron in the Soviet Union, and all of the liquid nitrogen? Who else could have done that as efficiently as you? I don't know, man. I thought this scene... It's so funny because I feel like the world would be a better place if men could genuinely give each other compliments all the time, except, and it's the only time it's socially, acceptable to get this real with your buddies is like when you're dying or someone they know is dying or like during like a fucking wedding or something. But, it's just, you know, like I just thought it was great. And then, you know, all this is made up and bullshit anyway, but like the green inchworm going onto his finger, like as kind of like a subtle hope for the future, I thought was really good. I don't know.
There was something about that worm that had a sort of chain reaction quality to it, the way it moves.
Yeah.
And as I was watching it, I couldn't help but think of both the reactor itself and also the chain of events that lead to, you know, what they essentially call, they mark as the downfall of the Soviet Union here, with the truth about Chernobyl coming out. I couldn't help but think about those concepts as represented visually on the screen by this worm.
Yeah.
And it seemed the perfect image for that moment, even though you would never think it immediately.
Like this particular organization is this carefully calibrated collection of lies.
Yeah.
And they're lies on top of along. Lives, and it's all humming along, and then Jared Harris is the inchworm. It's the one thing that you wouldn't think, like, oh, you know, xenon poisoning. You know, it's the one thing you're not accounting for, and it's going to, like, this KGB guy who we're going to talk about in the aftermath, who does this, like, epic, like, destruction of Jared Harris's character, or Legasov's character, he thinks that he's the control rods going back in, but in actuality, this is the thing that's going to blow everything up. I didn't think of it that way, but that's a great read of what's going on in the face of it.
Also, I think it's just a man who knows he's dying, savoring some of his last moments.
So, did you think that was improvised?
What do you mean?
Like, I just wonder if, like, there was...
Oh, the worm itself crawling onto him?
Yeah. I don't know. That's just one of those things where it's like, who script... But maybe you script that. But
yeah,
like,
no, it's an interesting scene for sure.
If, you know, Skarsgård's sitting there and there's an inchworm on him and he's like, oh, no, wait, nah, there's no way. That had to be scripted. But anyway, They go back in after this point, and this is kind of thing that gives, I think, one of the many things that gives Legasov a shot in the fictional arm here, that he's going to now go make his great stand. And he explains how, you know, the great tragedy is at this point, there's nothing valid to be learned from the test. They pulled this reactor back like a slingshot. Like he says further, it's like, you know, you're supposed to bring it back pull back 3 feet. They brought about 6 feet, and that no one really in the room understood why this was happening, like why the reactor wasn't, because they just weren't experienced enough. They didn't have enough of the grounding in the science to understand like why the reactor wasn't behaving the way, like, shit, we've pulled 97% of the control rods out of this thing and the thing's still going down to zero reactivity. Like, seriously, what the fuck? They have, and you know, the fact that even everything going wrong, they hit that button and everyone would be in a lot of trouble and this reactor would be down for weeks, if not months, but you wouldn't have irradiated a continent, and they hit the button and it blew up. So I just, the way they, and then here's where it's like, this is drama is like the fucking judge himself ask why. Because that's the thing, is I kept on wondering, it's like, if this guy never asks why, I don't know that Legislov gets in trouble.
Because he doesn't say we're cheap.
Because again, all this is bullshit and it's made up and all that. But like, yeah, because like that that allows him to answer. It's like, well, we made it out of this because it's cheaper and it's the reason we don't have containment buildings around our nuclear reactors, unlike every other nation in the world. It's the reason we don't use properly enriched fuel. It's the reason we use, like, look at this fucking reactor. It's a house of fucking cards. Every other reactor, if you take one of these things away, it's a negative coefficient. So, like, it needs these things to continue reacting. If you take anything away, it shuts itself down. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all, it's because they're all, it's the cheapest fucking way you can do it.
Yeah.
And the some of the things are incredible, like the fact that this reactor was designed to house 32 megawatts of power, and the last reading they got of the reactor before it blew was 33,000 megawatts. Mm-hmm. It was literally running an order of I'm just thinking, like, my God, holy shit. Like, if it, like, I don't, they made this case of, like, if it wasn't one thing, it would have been, and once the reactor got to this point, if it wasn't one thing, it was going to be another. It's just which part was going to fail first and explode. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've already talked about most of this stuff. Shall we get to the aftermath, which I'm going to count?
Sure.
They drag Legasov down to this Soviet-style, like, debriefing cell. I don't know where the hell this is at. And he has this confrontation with
How he looks at the drain in the floor.
Yeah, no, I mean, I knew he wasn't going to get shot in the head.
Obviously, he can't. We saw the first scene of the series,
right? But I don't think Legasov. Well, again, this
he doesn't
thing,
know in that moment. Certainly.
And that's the other thing. So again, I keep on talking about, like, all this stuff is bullshit. None of this stuff actually happened,
right?
But the fear that he could get a bullet, I think, is real. The reason that, like, the Dyatlov, when he was trying to defend himself and the other guys were like, quiet, you fool, it's because that's the way the Soviet show trials worked. I don't know how far you got into the podcast, but they made a point of, like, the way these things would go is a lot of times the defendant would be like, hey, Mr. Prosecutor, if anything, you're going too easy on me. I was even more like, here, look at all the things I did wrong, because they're literally trying to talk themselves out of a bullet.
Yeah.
Like, I want the land at 15 years hard labor. I don't want to land at me being shot and my brains being washed down a drain.
Yeah, you want to take the blame for the Soviet Union.
Yes.
Like, you are going to be the face of mistakes.
Because then you can, because if you do this thing, then you can live. If not, you die. And that fear is real, and that's why, even though we know he dies by his own hand years later, it actually works. But the thing, this whole scene ending up with Sharkov, like, he tries to just say, like, look, everything that you've done, I'm going to erase. No one is going to know who you are. And the reason this whole thing works is because we're watching a docudrama about this guy. He's now going to be world famous. Mm-hmm. And no one's going to, if anyone, you know, like, no one's going to remember the Sharkov character. It's so sweet and so awesome. And the line about when he goes, what if I don't cooperate? And the KGB guy says, why worry about something that we know is not going to happen? Mm-hmm. And he's like, we should put that on our money. such a great scene.
It's great.
It kills me that it's not real. because he also says, like, look, I know everything about you. I know your father was, his job was to measure people's purity. I know that you, in your position as director of this thing, suppressed Jewish scientists because you wanted to curry favor. Like, you're essentially just as bad as me.
Right.
And you're not brave, and you're not loyal, and no one's going to remember you. I loved it. I love
the difference here is he's learning lessons.
Yeah. And, like, he's like, you know, in a just world, I'd be shot for all the lies I've told.
Yeah.
And not this, the one time I actually told the truth. I thought that was really great. But I don't know. There was they close with a voiceover of Jared Harris delivering Legasoft's lines. I assume these are from the tapes. They might actually be fabricated. But it's like, you know, scientists are classically naive because their search for our truth blinds us to the fact that so few want to hear us. Mm-hmm. But the truth will lie in wait for as long as it needs to. And I used to fear the cost of the truth. Now I only ask what the cost of lies are. And then the title cards tell us, you know, Sherbina dies 4 years, 4 months after he stepped foot in Chernobyl. One thing I had, we talked about all those children and families playing in the nuclear fallout of the reactor on that bridge. As far as we know, everyone on that bridge that night died.
Yeah, so that makes perfect sense.
One quarter of the miners, 100 out of 400, died before the age of 40. That's way off the actuarial charts, even for Russian miners. It was widely circulated that the three divers that went in the water died, but apparently that wasn't true.
Yeah, two of them made it.
They all survived and
are still alive.
Two of them are still alive 30-plus years later.
That shocks me because I thought that they were essentially handing them a death sentence.
Yeah, yeah. It just goes to show, like, it's in the nature of the half-life, right? The half-life is a measure of, like, when half of things will decay.
Yeah, it's probabilistic, right?
Yes,
it's not deterministic.
Exactly. You know, you can still win that coin toss, and these gentlemen did. And then the final coda of, like, no official record was kept of the 600,000 conscripts, but it's widely believed that the death toll from Chernobyl is anywhere between 4,000 and 90-some thousand people. Mm-hmm. I think this is something that we should all think about, and something like the lessons we learn from this we should take into our private lives, our lives in corporate America, or wherever you're listening. I know we got a worldwide audience, and we've heard from several of those people. And this has been, I mean, this is, Jesus Christ, this is why I love doing Pauld Move, because I'm getting paid to talk about television. But the fact that we've been able to engage with people all over the world, people with personal experience with the Chernobyl, people with degrees in sociology and economics, and people that have worked with nuclear reactors, like, this is my it's just incredibly rewarding, and I want to thank everybody who's been a part of it. So
yeah, and I think with an event as shocking as Chernobyl was, it's easy to kind of forget the cost of lies.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't see people melting in the streets, right? You don't see people giving birth to babies who die 4 hours later as a consequence of the lies that we're telling ourselves now. The ways that it's changing our society and our planet are far more subtle, I think. Far more long-term, less immediate. And so it's easy to kind of ignore it. And I'm hoping that, you know, tying that message of lies directly to an event as horrific as this is going to wake some people up and make them think about, okay, what are we doing here within our own society, our modern-day societies that are sort of akin to the stuff that happened there, and what is that costing us? Because you do have to think a little bit harder. You know, it's not simply, well, my cousin's face melted off,
right,
and this was a terrible thing, and things have to change.
Yeah,
it's a lot more subtle. So I'm hoping that, you know, by us discussing all this stuff, especially with the feedback of our listeners, that we have at least, you know, moved somebody to think about the ways that this is playing out in modern day.
Yeah, because like I said, we do have our Dyatlovs in our society, and we have spent a lot in it seems like in my lifetime I've watched us take away the controls over individuals like that and reward them for the kind of short-sighted kind of gain-based culture that was rightly so taken to task in this series, and
they're much more subtle. They're much smarter, much less blunt of a weapon than guys like Sharkov.
Right. But it still happens, and we just have to be on guard because, like, it's immutable that the truth is eventually going to get out. When we're talking about physical, you know, realities, that eventually you will run out of that runway and you'll have to confront it. And it's always going to be more expensive. It's going to be more costly in terms of economic impact and lives to delay it rather than address it head on. And we can't tolerate that. And it sucks that, like, you know, the thing is the people that disagree are just as convinced that their worldview is true. But it's got so bad that it's a foundational issue. Like, we've let our education systems lapse that people don't know why things are true. Like, things can be true if one person says it and 100 other people says they're wrong. Well, I mean, maybe that one person is right. There's a way to have that happen, and it's the scientific method and peer review. It's not going on fucking talk shows and loudly platforming this guy against 100 experts that say he's wrong. Like, it's not, oh, he's got some kind of weird fucking website and he's maybe they are the lone voice of reason. Maybe we do have a safety switch so we can scram all this stuff, but that doesn't seem like it's the advice we're getting from the best and most qualified experts. And if you're going that route, how are you different from Dyatlov?
Mm-hmm.
If you are trusting that button that the experts are saying, boy, we're not even sure if you hit it right now, it's going to be enough to stop the worst of this, then I don't know what more to say, because you clearly know more than 90% of the experts in the world. So shall we get the feedback, Jim?
Yeah, let's do it.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcasts, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. You know, Jim, I used to fear the cost of a subscription to Netflix and HBO, and now I fear the cost of not supporting the club at club.baldmove.com. You know why? Because if it wasn't for the club, absolutely there would not be a Bald Move Television talking about Chernobyl.
That's true. Yeah.
If the club wasn't around, you'd probably have the Game of Thrones. It's a big show, pays for itself.
Mm-hmm.
You'd probably have, like, the Westworlds, but you wouldn't have these smaller shows, these things that kind of we take on as passion projects because we like it, and not a ton of people are watching it, but it's something that you can sink your teeth into, and it really tickles a lot of people's fancy, and it just wouldn't be possible unless we were able to do this as full-time jobs. And that freedom as independent podcasters lets us do, like, flyers on stuff like Chernobyl. And it's all of our thousands. We're over 5,000 club members strong right now. It's due to these people that we're able to do this work. And if you'd like to join those, if you'd like to keep us producing content like this, if you'd like to get a bunch of bonus stuff for your trouble, if you'd like to never have to listen to me pitch the club, for example, you got ad-free feeds, you got bonus audio and video content, you can preview a lot of that at club.baldmove.com. And as always, start a free 30-day trial at club.baldmove.com. We have a little bit this week. It's TV at baldmove.com. We don't normally do feedback in the course of our TV podcast, but, you know, we do for Chernobyl. Like, Cecily and I will be looking at Harlots next month, and I know we're going to be looking at, like, I think his Dark Material series will be covering that. These shows, when we give a little bit more extra coverage, we might have some feedback in the future. So it's always TV at baldmove.com, and you can also discuss stuff on forums.baldmove.com. Coincidentally, we had two Paul C's step forward to correct my math on the Soviet Union's ruble calculations. The first Paul C said the Soviet Union had hyperinflation when it collapsed. I'm showing the ruble back then was worth about the same as it was in U.S. dollars, so about $800, which would be a lot better than 30.
Sure.
Yeah, but
you're not wrong. The point stands, though. Like,
yeah,
it's not a life-changing amount of money.
$800 to shave a few years off your life. I don't know.
What was the average yearly income of a
Jesus Christ.
Soviet citizen?
The funny thing
is,
these guys, like, I actually spent a good amount of time trying to work different calculators that calculated inflation and all that stuff, and it just, like, I got, like, literally seven different answers, and...
Is there just, like, a Soviet calculator?
I mean, maybe it is, but it's probably in Cyrillic, because the other Paul C got the answer of it was worth about $2,500, so it's like... Hmm. Maybe it's $800, maybe $2,500.
You make the equivalent of $100 a year, shave 25 years off your life, you've been properly compensated.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, if these guys only made, like, $2,000 a year, and maybe they had a lot of purchasing power because they were provided... I mean, isn't that the whole thing about the Soviet Union, is you were kind of provided an allotment of housing and clothing and food, and
then
the money is kind of like buying private property, you know, a record player and stuff like that. So, like, I don't even know... how to fuck to directly compare a salary to, like, mine, you know? But I'm pretty damn sure I wouldn't take $2,500 to run on that fucking roof.
No.
I might do it out of sense of patriotism and saving the world, but the $2,500 would not be why I scrambled on that roof.
And they always made that point.
Yes.
It was scoffed at every time the money
every
was offered.
Every single time. Yeah. Lauren, you both were wondering what was being sprayed all over the ground and in the trees of Chernobyl, and it looks like it was something called BARDA, which was a chemical to bind the radioactive dust together, and then obviously drips down and it's contained in the ground. I also found a few articles about the dogs who still live in Chernobyl. According to the dogs of Chernobyl,
who now talk like human beings.
They do. They walk upright. They've evolved thumbs. Over 250 stray dogs
lived... They
made
their own Chernobyl documentary.
They did. It's called a documentary. Over 250 stray dogs live around Chernobyl's nuclear power plant, and another 225 live in Chernobyl City, and hundreds of other dogs live in various security checkpoints that and roam throughout the exclusion zone. She listed a website that kind of talks about this, and also it seems like some of them are safe enough that you can adopt them. There's actually a website that features animals that they rescue from the exclusion zone and are certified safe to adopt. I'll put those links, as I have been for, like I said, if you've been waiting to do a whole bunch of reading and watching on Chernobyl, just know that if you go through click on our Chernobyl tag and go through these last 5 weeks, I've collected a ton of YouTube commentaries and books and websites and, like, just everything you want to know about Chernobyl you can find, well, at least a good starting point by surfing through the show notes for the last few weeks. So thanks for that, Lauren. Travis W. recommends us to check out Atomic Homefront, which is a documentary that came out early in 2018 on HBO. It's an example of how our own government is just as bad, if not worse, than the USSR. I looked up real briefly. This is about the West Lake landfill in Missouri, which is a landfill that they decided to bury byproducts of weapons enrichment, nuclear, and just a regular old dump. And that started leaching out into the groundwater. And then a nearby dump caught on, like, the spontaneous fire, and the EPA's response to that, and the litigation and back and forth. If you want to see some more examples of maybe us whistling past a graveyard, Westlake landfill, the Atomic Homefront is the documentary they called. So thanks for that, Travis. Dave T, I have some links to a couple of short videos I remember watching a few years ago on a YouTube channel that I like, Veritasium. One is a mini world tour of some classic radioactive sites, including the hospital at Chernobyl, Fukushima, the first uranium mine, Marie Curie's lab, the Trinity bomb test site, etc., and which current background levels of radiation are measured. The second video is the same channel, but more footage of Pripyat itself, including the new containment building being constructed to replace the failing sarcophagus, and lots of interesting interior building shots throughout the town showing the current state of disrepair. So these documentaries are called The Most Radioactive Place on Earth and A Walk Around Chernobyl, and I will include those links in the show notes as well. And that completes our Chernobyl coverage. Again, thank you for going on this journey. This has been incredibly rewarding. It's been, whew, boy, someone pointed out in the forums that the limited series is going to be a shootout in the Emmys because you got sharp objects going up against Chernobyl.
Mm.
And they're very different. They're very different limited series and what they aim to do and the subject matter. But I also found them very personally affecting. Thank God for Baldi's purposes. We don't have to worry about it because sharp objects cleaned up last year and we're able to give it. And I think it probably goes to say that Chernobyl is going to make a lot of fucking noise on the Baldies this year.
I mean, Jared Harris has to go up against himself with the Terror. Is that right? Or is those
no,
the
Terror
not
happened
up?
Years ago, so it's not eligible for shit.
Years ago? I thought it was last year.
No, it's been like almost two and a half.
It was certainly on the Baldies last year.
No, it was Baldies 2017.
Oh, God. My perception of time has distorted.
We've been doing this a long time, Jim.
We have.
It's a flat circle, I hear. Just start a pointless debate because we don't give a shit about the Emmys and it's not going to prompt their Baldies. Soviet KGB gun to your head, drain at your feet, weird bucket knocked over in the corner, shitty fluorescent lighting flickering. What do you got over best limited series? Chernobyl or Sharp Objects?
Ugh.
I tell this fucker to shoot me. I can't. It's like they're like.
Yeah.
I
love them both so much.
I'd have to really wrestle.
I mean, Sharp Objects is not as important of the series. I think if I were going to judge, that would have to be a factor.
Yeah.
Chernobyl is a message that everyone needs to hear at this time, and I think I would give it to Chernobyl. That might be recency bias.
I'm gonna tell Sharkoff he's gonna have to shoot me. I don't think he's got. I think it's a bluff. I don't think he's gonna shoot me over whether I like Chernobyl better than Sharp Objects or not. But speaking of that, we do. If you discovered us through our coverage of Chernobyl, just know that if you stay, I encourage you to stay subscribed to this feed because we got a lot of television talk coming, a lot of HBO projects coming out later this year. And we're going to be covering them either on this feed or you'll be hearing about it in the housekeeping of this feed. So if you've enjoyed our coverage, we do this. I mean, this is our full-time jobs, and we try to bring this level of coverage to everything that we cover. So please, if you haven't already, subscribe to the Bald Move TV feed. We'd love to have you around. And again, thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next project. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.